Hello, it's Anna, editor at TICE here, and welcome to the Cracking Cybersecurity Podcast. This week, we are taking a look at Estonia, or rather, E-stonia. Estonia's e-revolution began in the 1990s, not long after independence from the Soviet Union. However, the massive cyber breach of 2007 was a wake-up call for the country, helping Estonians become experts in cyber defense. And the country was recently ranked as having the best cybersecurity in Europe. With us to discuss this is Joseph Carson, Chief Security Scientist at Thycotic, and he'll be talking about what other nations can learn from Estonia, particularly through developing a digital identity program for all citizens. Originally from Belfast, Joseph has been based in Estonia since 2003, so he's well versed on the subject. Don't forget, I'll be back at the end of the podcast with a cyber tip of the week. But for now, here is Joseph, who begins by explaining why the 2007 cyber attack was such a pivotal moment for Estonia.
What ended up happening was that Estonian government was not so much worried about the cyber attack and the things that was going on. During the attack, there was also a buildup of military on the border, and they were worried about a land invasion versus, you know, more similar to like Ukraine, Crimea, or a Georgia type of scenario. They were worried about that versus just a cyber attack. But the cyber attack did show one flaw in the original thinking that was back in 1991, and also the blockchain scenario, which that flaw was that if a land invasion happened, then the invaders could delete the core raw data that is there to provide integrity of the blockchain, meaning that the history could be changed because the data is centrally located in Estonia. They solved it from a digital capability, but not a land invasion. And that's what we realized, which was a doomsday scenario. So then it was all hands on deck to try and figure out how do we solve that. And of course, NATO Cyber Defense Center of Excellence was established in Estonia. Then we had lots of post-crisis meetings to determine, you know, this is a nation state attack, attribution. What do we do to make sure that Estonia can survive similar attacks in the future? And this ultimately in a very creative result, which was then the problem Estonia had was that they needed to distribute the sovereign data of Estonia beyond the borders. And you couldn't do it legally because the law prevented you from putting it in other locations. And ultimately then came the idea of data embassies. So data embassies was similar to your own physical embassy in other countries, but it's for putting your data. And ultimately, Estonia then started adopting that term of data embassies and started then putting their core data, the sovereign data, into data center locations outside of Estonia that was classified as a data embassy. So distributing itself digitally, meaning that now if you attack Estonia, that you need to attack multiple countries, or if it's a land invasion, Estonian government can survive without actually having physical land, because the systems are available outside of Estonia. So this is kind of the evolution. What it really impressed me in that side is that one is the vision and not seeing these challenges or these issues as a reason to go back. Every time somebody hits a roadblock, or they started all of a sudden saying, well, let's go back to the old way. It was better. And what Estonia does is that they embrace it. They look at how to move forward, how to break through that blocker, and keep moving forward with the vision. They realize that we have to embrace it, and we have to embrace it with responsibility, with security, and with transparency. And if we do that, then we can be more innovative. Estonia is, from a digital identity perspective, what I think Estonia has really seen is that they've got the kind of basis of what I refer to as the sure economy of identities. There's a great book by Aid McCormick, who says that we're going to go back to basically short jobs. We're going to go back to skills. You're going to have skills and you're going to sell those skills to multiple people or companies. And it means that people will probably, because of the speed of artificial intelligence and machine learning, our jobs will probably be short term. They're not long term jobs because machines will ultimately take over the tasks that we do. So you have to be very good at reskilling yourself. And ultimately, Estonia has created that environment in their society of actually having a sure economy of identities and actually getting to a point where they're almost a skill-based society where their skills are used by multiple companies. and that identity that they have can be used for multiple companies. So that's where really where we see the future going. And, you know, the government itself being a service provider now for citizens, and the citizens being a digital society, and really kind of moving the identity being the core part of that entire basis, and blockchain for the integrity part of it, and digital signature for the approval of a change, means that other countries should really not just look at the technology and not look at what they've done, because I don't think the technology is the important part. I just think it's the thought and the process that they experienced to where they got to where they are today, that other countries can definitely learn from the vision and the future that Estonia is going to.
Do you think every country can work like this? Estonia is relatively small and has a good sense of what their identity is. Obviously, after communism, they wanted to really crystallize that identity. Right. Could this work everywhere?
Absolutely. The idea was is that not only in Estonia did it work for their own citizens, but it also, the government moving to a service provider kind of approach means that no matter what citizens they have, you know, they have Estonians and there's also Russians and there's Ukrainians and there's a lot of expats in Estonia, that they're transparent to all citizens. So it's flexible. If you're in a situation where you're in a country that is very diverse or even split down the middle between two, different opinioned societies, then going to a service provider type of scenario means that you're open and transparent to both sides, meaning that they're more willing to work with the government in that way. If you're hiding things, then you know you're going to create disruptions, you know, between, and people don't have confidence in the government, which is what we're seeing a lot today. So in order to provide future sustainability, governments need to become more transparent. So while Estonia is a small country in population, it's the technology what provides the scalability, but the methodology can be reused anywhere.
And if that technology comes into the hands of a government which is not so trustworthy and so open, what could happen there?
Well, it doesn't make a lot of difference. The only difference is that they're going to, you know, that government is going to continue down the path that they're probably doing. And historically, the technology itself will not give them any additional benefit other than having a central place where they have visibility of data.
So what can other nations learn from Estonia?
I think other nations can learn that that what you can do is really allow technology to be adopted much quicker by having this at the basis. Once you have a digital identity and once you have a way of de-risking and having that data published and available, what you end up having is you can make things happen much faster as you bring on new systems. The next thing that we're doing is e-receipts and, you know, health, electronic health, and everything else is becoming very fast. So it allows new initiatives to be adopted much faster, cheaper, and with the same back end that allows us to reuse. So what happens is, ultimately, other countries, if you think about Estonia saving about seven days GDP per year, if you think about, okay, that's a small number for Estonian economy, but if you think about a larger economy, like even UK or US, that's huge savings. And if you look at that, that's, I think, what other countries can not only look at the ability to be transparent, to be more of a service provider, but also look at the savings they can do from having an automated system like this.
It's been labeled as the security center of excellence. Is it just about being open? Surely there are other reasons for this.
Well, there's other reasons. I mean, it's up there, one of the leading countries in the world in regards to cyber defense and cyber practices. And of course, there's a reason, you know, having a noisy neighbor, as I refer to, it keeps you on your toes. It keeps you making sure you're not become complacent, that you're diligent and you keep everything focused. You're always looking. You're always assuming. So I think that's one of the things is that definitely it makes Estonia a center of excellence for security and cyber in general, because we're always assuming that we're already looking for a breach, that we're already looking for a compromise, and that always assume the worst case scenario. So that always keeps you on your toes. It keeps you prepared. It keeps you, well practiced. And they also, what they do is they have a cyber defense league that opens them up into involving the community in some of those practices as well. That gets the citizens involved. So there is a good cooperation between both the citizens and the government when it comes to defense.
And psychologically this might be difficult for some citizens, some nations even. What do you think could be done to change that?
I think the problem was more many countries have taken a wrong approach at how they communicate what they're actually trying to achieve. So it all comes down to communication. If you communicate that this is a way of improving security, you're already going down the wrong path because citizens think that it's a way of not only securing, but also a way for the government to be a big brother. That's some way that is confusing that people are not seeing the visibility. But if you treat it in a way that as a service provider, that you're providing a much easier service, what happens is if you say to someone, okay, today this is how you do it, and it takes you, you know, a day to go and change your driver's license address, but tomorrow by putting this system in place, it takes you 5 minutes. Which would you choose? And people are going to go, well, to be honest, I would rather choose the 5 minutes. If I can do it online, I'll do it that way. So it comes down to how you communicate it and how you portray it. And ultimately then also show that not only are we providing that way, but we're also providing you the ability to see these changes and see the tracking of who has access to it. So not only are you providing the automation, the quickness and the efficiency, but you're also providing the citizen the ability to self-audit. And that's what allows you adoption. It allows you, if you communicate in such a way it's that the citizen's benefiting from it versus communicating in a way that we're doing this for security reasons, you're already going to, you know, how you communicate it is the most effective way to get the citizens to buy into it.
And what do you see in the future? Do you see everybody adopting this way of life, or is it too utopic?
I don't think everyone's going to adopt it. The way the world is today, we have to realize that there is no many borders. You know, we're humans at first, then we're whatever, you know, culture, that, you know, location we are second, and maybe our cultural background, where we originally came from, third. The problem has everyone's reversed that. Everyone looks at it from, you know, this is my culture first and my country second, and, you know, that I'm a human third. I think it's the wrong way that we look in it, that until everyone starts realizing that we're all on the same planet and that we have restrictions on where we go, that I don't think, you know, for me, that's a utopia. It's when I don't see that, at least in my lifetime, that we're going to achieve that. It would be great. But unfortunately, the problem we have is we're a society of consuming. We're always consuming everything. So, and when profit and greed gets into it, then it's very difficult for some places to achieve it. We could achieve it in regions in the world. You could get to the point where it could be something that countries or regions could work together to achieve this. But on a global stage, I think it's more challenging.
Which is the next country to go that way, do you think?
I think there's several potentials, definitely the Nordic countries. You've seen that recently Finland have signed an agreement with Estonia, so it looks like Finland are definitely on board to adopt. I mean, Finland's always been up there. Actually, Finland was one of the first to attempt it, but failed with the same problem with the communication. So I think that Finland are definitely on the right path. Also, other Nordic countries like Sweden as well. I know that in Canada, they're attempting to go down the same path. Australia, Singapore, and Japan, these are all countries that are attempting it. And there's also, you know, some African nation countries who are really looking at this as well. Because you're in Africa, you have a similar situation where you've got countries who are near other countries where there's some conflict. So there's always that worry. So what they want to do is become more digital and make that capability more self-sustaining. So there is a lot of countries around the world that do have this initiative and are going this path. The question is how they implement it and how they do it. Because it's not just technology, it's also culture. And it's also basically making sure the legal framework and the government support. You need all of those working in balance at the same time and the right timing in order to make this possible.
Thanks to Joe. And now for our cyber tip of the week. Get rid of any software or apps you don't use regularly. The more software you keep on your devices, the more at risk they are from hackers. So get deleting now. If anything, it's cathartic. That's all we have time for this week. If you like this podcast, please do subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher and review and rate the shows. Thanks so much for all your support so far. Until next time, goodbye.